This is Scott Pilgrim versus the Minute 112. Welcome to the Scott Pilgrim vs. the Minute podcast, a show where we review and analyze the movie Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, a 1 minute at a time. I'm Brian Mission, and from Podcasterbia, it's Dave Castile.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And from Streaming Nonsense, it's Sam Brown.
Hello.
Hello. This is the last minute. We're going to go about 6 seconds over, because it's actually a minute and six on this last one, but I know, we're breaking our own rules here. Before we get to the last minute, which we're going to talk about the soundtrack, the songs, there's a little bit at the very end of the credits where the end comes up on the screen. And then we get this little 8-bit Scott kind of matching his comic book version look of him. I'm wondering if it matches the one in the video game. I don't know. I never played the game. But he starts destroying the end context, eating it and punching it and all that. Coins fall, and that's it. So get one last little post-credit scene there. Do y'all like that?
He was like the number one pose.
Yeah. Yeah, the success
almost pose. Like an Usain Bolt thing.
Yeah. So, good little post-credit thing. I'd be shocked if they didn't do one, even back in 2010. It's fitting.
And then at the very end, he teleports out in a way. It blips out.
It's right.
An odd way to end it, but okay.
Yep. So, now we get our soundtrack discussion. So we're following all the songs are kind of listed in the credits there. It's where the minute starts. You kind of can scroll through them. I'm going to defer to you guys because you guys knew a lot more of these bands and songs than me that I did. So, but I know that, you know, the first song listed in the soundtrack, I'm looking at the soundtrack list on Wikipedia. The original motion picture soundtrack was the We Are Sex Bob-omb. Writer was Beck, and that's, I'm guessing, is the Launch Pat McQuack song there, which is the song that you hear ad nauseum in this.
How many times does that show up
in this podcast, actually? It's our intro and outro theme. So thank you, Beck, for allowing us to use that and give you all these credit for all of eternity. Fan of the show, Beck, by the way.
Yeah.
So, I like that song. It's actually, I love the, with any of the Sex Bob-omb songs. So that one and Garbage Truck. And what was the other one?
Summertime is the last one.
Summertime. That's the one they played against.
Well, there's Threshold. So Threshold was what they played, at the Katyanagi fight.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah.
Loved them all.
Summertime's during the credits.
Yeah, I just love the trashy garage band sound. I love the all the songs that they did. Just those lyrics that it's like, yeah, you're singing about that right now, aren't you? Type lyrics. It's like not something you'd think would be written as lyrics for a song, but yeah, that you're going there. I enjoyed those songs. I think the music was fun. So, what do you guys got?
I would say it is not a style that I like, even a little bit.
Yeah.
but obviously it works great here. So I tolerate it for the sake of the context and the atmosphere.
Dave, did you enjoy it? I mean, so how would you classify Sex Bob-omb's songs?
I think GarageBand is a really good way of...
Oop, careful.
Oh, God.
I'm knocking stuff over in my desk here. GarageBand is a really good way to kind of classify that. You know, heavy distortion.
Yeah. Are they punkish? Are they?
Yeah, punk metal.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of kind of what I think of is, you know, Nirvana before they got access to a studio.
Gotcha.
And I'm not a huge Nirvana fan, but nothing against them. It's just, you know, it's I like... Anyway, okay. But so I mean the soundtrack. I mean this is the part that I love, right? I mean
I
love movies where the music is its own character in the movie, and this movie was very much that. I mean, you take away the music out of this, and it's nothing. Everything was done so well and so well choreographed with with the fights or with just the scenes, that's what's going on, and the way it was written, you know, to where, you know, we kind of touched on it there about what they're singing about is contextual kind of for the scene, in many cases.
Right.
So it was just amazing. Beck did the majority of the writing. He's given kind of the bulk credit for it, but he didn't necessarily perform a lot of it. He just kind of wrote it. He did perform a couple of them in there.
Right.
So I guess Sex Bob-omb is a quote unquote real band, or a band formed for the purpose of this movie, you know, with Michael Cera and whatnot. I mean, I got what I'm looking at, the, you know, the artists on,
they're here, listed in there. Yeah.
They list, yeah, Sex Bob-omb, Michael Cera, Alison Pill, Mark Webber, you know, Beck and Brian LeBarton. So there's your kind of your other two people that would make up some of the back sounds that
sure
may have been missing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, you know, clever.
Then we got the song Scott Pilgrim, which is we'd referenced in the past, was a song by Plumtree, and Scott wears a Plumtree shirt, and that was an older song that was the inspiration for the name that Brian Lee O'Malley.
I really want to like listen to that,
but I don't remember that song. What's in the movie, so
bring it up. YouTube, here we come.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
I'll talk about, while we're thinking about that, the Crash and the Boys songs. That what I love is that for the I'm So Sad, So Very, Very Sad, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 writers for that. And the track length is 13 seconds.
And it takes longer to say the title than it does for the song, right, to be sung.
And the artist is listed as Crash and the Boys, but then it says Broken Social Scene and Eric Knudsen, whoever they are. Sorry if I don't know.
Broken Social Scene is a few credits in the soundtrack.
Yeah, they've done a couple of things.
They got Anthems of a 17-Year-Old Girl, which is the song that we saw during the various Knives moments during the breakup, and then during the moment after Kadianagi Twins. And gosh, that Anthems of a 17-Year-Old Girl had everybody writing it too. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 credits for the writers. That's why Beck is amazing.
But I feel like because there's a distinction between.
So it's seven writers, you said, for Anthem for a 17-Year-Old Girl, and only two of those writers are women. Something's wrong there.
No. I'm not going there. Yes, exactly. No, 1, 2. Well, Anthems of a 17-Year-Old Girl is 4 minutes and 36 seconds. It was I'm So Very Sad is 13 seconds. But yeah, gosh, there were so many writers for that Anthems of a 17-Year-Old Girl.
Well, and We Hate You, Please Die, it's like 59 seconds.
It has four writers as well. So same writers as I'm So Sad, So Very, Very Sad. So yeah, it's good stuff there. But that's what always amazes me about Beck is, and what's great about Beck, not necessarily amazes, but what the credit he gets is just that he's just a total songwriter. You know,
he's a total write writer songs
and
that
performer.
To write these songs that are kind of gibberish in a way,
mm-hmm,
like that takes a certain amount of skill.
That's how Beck got started.
Yeah, it's a poetry.
He was a busker.
Yeah, it's a poetry of his style and the style that he writes. I mean, I'm not a huge Beck fan, but I mean, I know of his stuff, and his style's always been a little off.
His whole thing was, do people even pay attention to the words that I'm saying?
Right.
which is why, when you know, you go to you know, Loser and whatnot, that song makes no sense.
Right.
It's not supposed to. It was literally, you know, that's his kind of his shtick, is, you know, not supposed to make sense.
Right. All right. So what else, Dave, on this soundtrack here?
I mean, the very, very similar to, you know, the original Batman. Beck got, you know, kind of a lot of the writing, did a lot of the work, but it was Metric that got a lot of the credit for Black Sheep, you know, which is the big song that everybody really, really knows from this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you know, people do that, you know, and they'll be like, oh, you know, Black Sheep or Metric, you know, but no, it was Beck, you know, doesn't mean that song was fantastic. I mean, I'm a Metric fan anyway, and that is, you know, one of my favorite songs by them. So it was really well done, but they kind of got undue credit. So kind of pointing that out.
Now that's the,
that was the Clash of Demon
Clash of Demon Head song.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't realize that Metric are from Toronto.
I didn't know that either.
I'm just looking at the little highlight on Wikipedia about that. I wonder if they were selected, like that was a great bonus, or like, oh, you guys are also from Toronto, or if they were selected.
It's very possible from some of the other stuff as they were trying to find, like, who's the biggest band from Toronto?
It's probably a bunch.
There's these guys. They're bluegrass. It's not going to work.
Right.
You know, so.
All right. There's obviously the Ramona song.
One of the few Beck actually performed.
We hear Beck, yeah, that's the closing credits.
The acoustic version, yeah, I think is what we hear in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting that there's like multiple arrangements of this song.
What was that? You know, Scott sings one to Ramona during their first date there, when garlic bread makes you fat.
Was that
garlic bread? Bread makes you fat.
And yeah, there was Summertime was a Sex Bomb song in the credits.
Yeah.
We had Under My Thumb from Rolling Stones. We knew that one. That was the Gideon song.
Very in the background, just in a radio on the limo as it's going by, which is really interesting to take such a major label.
Yeah.
And he was such an indie music guy, but he's got the Rolling Stones. Granted, you know, I think everybody has the respect for the Rolling Stones, but still you wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, and it was relevant to the scene with lyrically.
It was contextual.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
Anything else that jumps out at you? Teenage Dream by T-Rex. Not the Teenage Dream by that other person.
Yep.
Name escapes me.
I noticed in the soundtrack, but in the credits in the movie, they have To Ramona by Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that song, but I've heard of Bob Dylan, so I pointed out here.
He's been around.
Yes, I guess he did stuff.
Howard Stern said F.U. Bob Dylan at the recent Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. So.
Cool. Good for him.
Was
that like a F.U. Bob Dylan or a
yeah,
F.U.
yeah, yeah, it was. Dylan. That was the first one. Could have been the second one.
Could have been the second one.
Very good. The soundtrack was great. I think we definitely all loved it. And Dave's absolutely right. It's a character of its own in the film. And without it, I mean, what is this movie if there isn't the whole band music background? I mean, you know, the fights, you know, several of the fights happen because of the music
at shows.
Yeah. So how does this work otherwise? You know, how do you change this?
And the music is also really reflective of kind of who's playing it and whatnot too. Right. I mean, so the dirty, the grungy, the unrefined, that's all the Scott stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you get into the big, you know, the metric, the black sheep where that is the one kind of true solid album song.
Polished, yeah.
The whole thing's very polished. And they were a polished band, you know, and they were, you know, choreographed and all that. And then when you get into it at the end, when Scott walks into the Gideon Theater, what they're playing, was it No Fun No More, whatever it is, you know, that's a lot more polished for what they had been. And they look it and, you know,
they themselves were polished up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they sold out. I mean, that was the whole point was that they'd done that. So the music is very, very reflective of all of that. And even when he's doing the acoustic Ramona,
it's raw.
It's there. Yeah. It's raw and it's incomplete. Kind of like Scott was a little incomplete at that time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so telling its own story. Along the side and to be able to do that. And I mean, music is part of the movie anyway, because, you know, it's a band, you know, you can't have a music about a movie about a band without having music in there. So it just it's not going to happen. Can't have a football movie without having an athlete in it. You know, it's one of those types of things. So
sure.
I mean, I guess you could, I think Any Given Sunday pretty much did that, but So it's so important that that it works, and it does, and it's very successful at it. I mean, there's ways you can get away with theoretically taking a soundtrack out of another movie, but not this one.
Yeah, no, this one is, like, you're absolutely right. It's a character of its own. It fits all the moods and the moments at the time that were in the film. And very good at that. There was definitely a lot of respect and thought taken into the music as well with framing the scenes.
Right.
Yeah, you know, because a lot of times soundtrack is an afterthought and songs are put in after the fact. But there was definitely intent here behind it.
Yeah. I'm not the super Edgar Wright familiar that you guys are. Is that a normal thing that he does? Is he really kind of known for, having quality music in his stuff? You know, like anything with Tim Burton is always going to have a quality score to soundtrack, usually by Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
There's always a tie-in of the type. You know, it's not always Danny Elfman, but anything Tim Burton's still going to do that.
Yeah, I always recall, I mean, with the Edgar Wright movies, that the music really is important to it. I'm trying to remember if it's always soundtrack or just really good score that goes along with it, but the music is always part of the scene and helps drive the emotion of the scene. Yeah. That's not unusual.
Like I think he uses it a lot for punctuation. Right. Like I'm thinking Shaun of the Dead.
And, yeah, Shaun of the Dead really does a lot of like a heavy hard rock score during all the fight sequences, and it really kind of like that's a good word, punctuation to the scene.
Okay, but I mean, so Shaun of the Dead. I mean, I know those. I don't think about those for their soundtrack. Granted, they weren't movies about bands.
Yeah, and I'm not sure he has another movie that I've seen that where the soundtrack is a character like it is in this one, though. It's but the soundtrack or the music and the score do help the scene.
Similar to the way we see a lot of the same cuts, and scene transitions in all Edgar Wright movies. I think he uses music oftentimes in similar ways. This one's different because it's bands that we're portraying.
Right.
The character of it's different, like you were saying, Dave, and I think you made a lot of good points there.
Very good.
I'm actually kind of going through some of the other stuff here. So,
I'm bad at looking.
Baby Driver. I've actually heard good things about that from a soundtrack standpoint.
Yeah,
and I didn't know that was Edgar Wright.
He wrote it. He was going to direct it, but they kicked him out because he wanted to make the movie his way. And that didn't fit with the Marvel way.
The Marvel way, yeah.
That's why you get the two scenes where in Ant-Man where the buddy is explaining and they have like how they figured
I love those scenes. They were brilliant.
Obviously, that came from that's an Edgar Wright thing.
Yeah, okay, that's why they felt familiar. Okay.
So there's some Edgar Wright moments throughout the film. It's just it's a shame that he didn't direct it because what a movie that would have been. I actually don't mind Ant-Man, but it's a shame that he didn't get to be the one to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the story was his, and early screenplay was his.
So I was picking out a lot of the other acknowledgments and thank yous as we were going through the end of the credits here.
Sure.
So they pointed out there was a Fargo poster somewhere in this movie.
Oh, really?
They thank them for the use of the Fargo poster.
Well, you gotta...
They thank Threadless for Funkalicious, a t-shirt called Funkalicious. I mostly wear Threadless t-shirts, so that's interesting to me. They all have names, so I don't know the Funkalicious one, but it's in there.
Okay.
They call out the BlackBerry sounds, the Mac sounds, the Windows sounds, the You've Got Mail from AOL. Yep. They call out Super Mario All-Star, Super Mario Brothers 2, and Zelda.
Yep, there are a lot of those in there.
The Spike TV logo that appears in the Lucas Lee newspaper ad, I believe.
Yep.
They even called out the textbooks, which I think were textbooks that Knives is probably carrying, Geometry and Discrete Math, grade 12, student edition. There was another one. I'm like, I'm not even going to write that one down. It's like some sort of statistical thing.
Sure.
They called out Crisis Zone, Galaga, Miss Pac-Man, Time Crisis, Tekken 5, Dark Resurrection, and Nirin from Namco. Pac-Man, Tetris, Sega Sonic and Knuckles.
You got to think about all the games that they took sounds from and referenced that somebody actually you know, their job was to take the time to go through all these games and find great sounds.
Right, someone
and
had to catalog sounds just right,
and to go ahead and put them in. You know, sound designers and sound editing. I mean, yeah, people always complain about that in Academy Awards season because it's like, who cares? I mean, that's taking up time in a you know, ceremony that, you know, I'd rather hear about the actors. But so much goes into the sound effects, and this movie requires that. I mean, there's so much attention paid to those
and sound design
effects.
Is always vitally important, and because like everything you hear on screen is in some way sound designed, Foley'd or ADR'd or whatever. Like you rarely hear, my understanding is you rarely hear things that are just rawly recorded off, you know, what's actually happening in the scene.
It blows me away how many times how much dialogue is not used or in is ADR'd in a movie.
Yeah.
And how well that gets edited in to look like that's naturally spoken.
Yep. And you know, working, I think Dave can have the same thing, like working in video games, so much of the game is about the sound design.
It's all about the immersion, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like it has to have the right character and feel to it.
Yep.
You've only have two senses you can play with, visual and audio. So you've got to do it right. And if one of, you know, if part of it's missing, then it's just
not a complete
fails,
game.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome.
And then there were a bunch of thank yous at the end, which
were
included,
in
huh?
I don't think we're not in there.
We were not in there.
It should be.
It's a post note. So there's Second Cup, which was the one of the coffee shops. There was Pizza.
Yep. Gotta love Pizza.
The Beguiling. I think it's a store, but I'm not sure what. Sonic Boom. Dark Horse Coffee, the Bloor Cinema. I feel like we should look that up. Like maybe it was in the background, or maybe it was what the Chaos Theater was or something. I don't know. He thanked Guillermo del Toro, Hope Larson, which is Brian Lee O'Malley's wife.
Oh, really?
Brie Larson?
I wondered about that. I tried looking it up and I didn't say anything, but maybe. Jackie Chan,
really?
J.J. Abrams,
Abrams,
Joe Cornish. I recognize the name, but I'm not sure from where. Kevin Smith. And just because it sounded funny to me, Michelle the Dog Pope. And there was a note at the end.
Michelle the what?
The Dog Pope.
Dog Pope. Okay. Not Pope Michelle the Dog Poop. Okay.
Nope. And there was a note at the end about it
one
was.
One of them is like nice. The other one's like, yeah, you're an ex-girlfriend and I'm just going to call you the Dog Poop. So.
In memory of Chris Howard. And I tried looking up who Chris Howard was. There was a lot of them, so I couldn't find which specifically on IMDb, but you know.
Good stuff.
And then, like you said, the little ending credit animation was cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we wrap up our minutes, I'd like to give everybody here a chance to say one last thing before we say goodbye for the minutes. So we're not done. We're going to do some special episodes, one-offs here and there. Especially based on any thoughts and suggestions you all might have. So we'll start with Dave. Dave, anything you'd like to finish off by saying?
I mean, this is as much to kind of the listeners. Thank you guys for listening to us. It was Brian and Sam. Thank you. You guys kind of had to talk me into this because I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm really, really glad you did and that you pulled me into that meeting with. And my final thanks is to Dave Campfield. Yep. Did I say his name right?
Yep, Dave Campfield.
Yeah, and yeah, for because he was in that meeting too, and I've had a blast kind of with this whole production. The movie, I've loved the movie since the first time I've seen it. I'm glad that Ryan, you finally saw the light, and that it has come into you know, one of your top five movies now.
It's close.
Maybe
yeah.
Someday I'll get it up there with Glory.
Nothing's top in Glory.
Wow, really? That's the hill you're dying on.
No, this was fun, and we kind of had a conversation off the air at some point of we did not anticipate the amount of detail we were going to see in the background and the X's and all that, and that was so much fun to really kind of get into that nitty gritty. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I had a blast. This was a good time. And you know, now it's like every time I watch it, it's like looking a little deeper. So it's what else, what did we miss? What else is
yeah,
in there? So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward when we do the specials. I think those are going to be fun too.
Yep. Very good. And Sam, what do you have to say?
Yep. what he said. Yeah. Yeah, you know, thanks everyone for listening and coming along with us. I looked forward to doing this like every week. I think my enthusiasm was a lot more obvious early on. I was really excited to jump into it and find all that crazy stuff, because the beginning half of the movie is all about introducing these characters in the world. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's just been a great trip, and I look forward to finding things I hadn't seen before as we went into it, you know, every minute. And that was a great experience. And, you know, I love this movie already, but my appreciation just grew again as we went through this experience.
That's awesome. Yeah. And for me, I mean, yeah, again, when I first thought about doing this, I mean, it was introduced to us as an idea. I'd never heard of this concept of the movies by movies the by minutes and moviesbyminutes.com. I haven't plug them in a while, but check them out. There's tons of movies doing this, and there's several movies that are done multiple times, you know, with just people with their different takes on it. It's so interesting watching films. I mean, we have all loved watching films, and you know, Sam and I watch some pretty unusual films on Streaming Nonsense, and Dave and I have talked about some mainstream films and other films, you know, with our lists on Podcasterbia. And it's just, to watch a movie this way, I watch all movies now almost this way now. You know, it's just really had an impact on me in watching films. It's just, I'm like, I just look at a minute and it's like, I see something. I'm like, if I ever do that movie by the minute, I got to remember that one little moment, because that's so random. But yeah, and thanks to Dave Canfield for recommending it to us. It was a lot of fun to do. When it was funny that when we first decided to do this, you know, I had gotten a message from Dave because he had just seen Scott Pilgrim recently, and he's like, we should do a podcast about Scott Pilgrim. And then the next day, Sam's like, yeah, I think we should do, you know, Scott Pilgrim for that Minutes podcast. And I'm like, both of you mentioned a Scott Pilgrim podcast, and I hadn't mentioned this Minutes thing to Dave yet at the time. And that's where it all kind of tied together. And yeah, we weren't sure how it was going to work out. We listened to other ones and thought, you know, are we going to do it their way? Are we going to do it our way? And I think we've been friends for a long time. And I think doing it our way was the most comfortable way. And it really, the chemistry, I think, was there. I think we had a great time doing it. And I do look forward to the specials. So that'll be a lot of fun. Because there's a lot of other things we could talk about without the constraints of a minute that we can just really get into. As you've seen from these credits episodes, I mean, they've been much longer because we could just kind of go all in on it. So, yeah, that's it. We thanks listeners for all the downloads. And any conversation that we've had, Tom Fisher, I'm going to shout out to him, one of our listeners who's given us so much content. He's big fan of our several of our podcasts, and we appreciate him and all the contribution he made on Facebook. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, so Dave, how can the listeners participate in the show?
You can find us on the Twitter at Scott versus Minute, hashtag I'm so sad, so very, very sad. You can find us at scottversusminute.com. You can find us at Scott versus Minute on the Facebook, and you can email scottversusminute@gmail.com.
Very good. And Sam and I have a podcast, as we've talked about, on Streaming Nonsense. He's going to tell you about more, or tell you more about it now.
The most polished ending I could come up with is not this. Brian and I review all sorts of obscure movies on streaming services, both obscure studio and obscure mini, micro, no-budget movies. And Brian encouraged me to pick out this particular movie, which is The Last 5 Years, which features Anna Kendrick. And it is about beginnings and endings. I'll put it like that. Right. It's a full-on musical movie based on a musical play, stage show. Our show is called Streaming Nonsense. You can find it at streamingnonsense.com.
Very good. You can find Dave and I at podcasterbia.com, where we do a show where we talk about, well, we drink beer and talk about pop culture and all those things that interest us. We also check out our Blacklist show, where we review NBC's The Blacklist one episode at a time. So, and that's going to do it for this podcast. So we'll see you all next time.